This is the Leprechaun Lunch with Sean and Sharpley.
Look, we're going to shake things up.
On Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT.
I don't think we're asking the right question. I think the question we should be asking is, do you believe in this thing or not?
The Leprechaun Lunch with Sean and Sharpley.
What do you mean? Of course martial arts training is relevant.
Now your hosts.
Let me save you some time. Get comfortable.
WSBT Radio's Sean Steyer.
Let's get started.
And former Irish quarterback, Evan Sharpley.
Stay sharp.
Welcome once again to the Leprechaun Lunch and Five Star Dive Bar in downtown Elkhart, 526 South Main Street, along with Notre Dame quarterback and baseball player Evan Sharpley. I'm Sean Steyers, and we're glad to be out here at Five Star once again. I just had part of the lunch special. That's right. I inhaled right before we went on.
Did you even breathe?
I tried. I cannot confirm whether or not I actually did. Why don't you tell everybody what the lunch special is before we get started?
Well, we've got a half turkey club sandwich and a cup of soup. Your choice for $6. I'm all over that one right there.
I vouch for the turkey club.
It's going to be showing up here in front of me pretty soon, too.
All right. All right. Sounds good. And I went with some shrimp cocktail instead of the soup, actually.
You love the
today.
Shrimp cocktail.
I do.
That's your stuff right there.
Big fan
is
of the shrimp cocktail.
Good?
It is. It's very tasty. I mean, just look at it.
Looks good.
It's like, what, six shrimp hanging over the side of a cocktail glass?
And we had the deep-fried mushrooms last week.
Mm-hmm.
Those might be the biggest mushrooms I think I've ever had.
And the biggest mozzarella sticks,
yeah, those
too.
Those are good.
That's right. All right, so what else is going on right
well,
now?
Well, you know, you should come back here and check out all they have, you know, in the way of entertainment. They have trivia, karaoke, there's dueling pianos, live bands on Fridays and Saturdays. You've got the Five Star Comedy Club. There's food, sports, music, and fun. We're going to be here on Fridays.
Absolutely.
There's still tickets to the comedy show tonight if you'd like to come. It does include dinner and your first drink.
Oh, dinner
20
and
bucks.
Drink.
Yeah.
$20. That's not bad at all.
I might be bringing my wife.
All right.
We just got to get someone to find or to watch Lucy.
That's right. Always got to find the babysitter.
That's right.
All right. Well, we've got a lot to talk about today. I mean, we're kind of all over the place because that's what you get in January. That's right. That's exactly right. And you know, speaking of the off season, this has been the season of movement as far as coaches go.
What the heck?
First of all, so Autry Denson, Notre Dame's running back coach, leaves to become the head coach at Charleston Southern this week. Charleston,
big
South
congratulations
Carolina.
Congratulations to Coach Denson.
Absolutely. Becoming a head coach. Big move for him, obviously. So just some of your thoughts on that, first of all, Evan.
Well, I shed a tear. And
did you really?
I love Coach Denson. I love what he's done with the running back group and that program. You know, this is obviously a step up for him as far as being able to take over a program and grow that. But my question right now is, you know, who is going to come in and do a better job than the guy who is the all-time leading rusher at Notre Dame? I mean, that opens up some doors on the recruiting trail, too. You know, it's going to be interesting to see what happens moving forward on who is going to fill that space. I heard Eric Hansen talk earlier this week on, you know, whoever comes in has the opportunity to take maybe a step forward on the recruiting side and getting into Florida and Georgia. And again, my question is, who? If you're the all-time leading rusher and you apparently, you know, whether or not Eric's making the case that he couldn't get it done to a certain extent, who else is going to do it?
Yeah. Well, I think, and this is something that we talked about last week when we hear a lot of the fan stuff talking about the need to get more five-star guys in here, that kind of thing. So when you look at this position now, because it is still open right now, it's not like they just ran out and snatched somebody up. At least we haven't heard about it anyway, because we know the vetting process takes a little bit longer, thanks to one Mr. George O'Leary. But so if you were writing a job description for Notre Dame's next running backs coach, what would it look like?
Well, I mean, you're going to want to try to plug and play right now with what Notre Dame has been doing at the running back position. You know, this is going to have to be a guy that's going to come in. I think he needs to be an elite recruiter. I mean, really, we don't necessarily need to look at player development. Notre Dame's going to, you know, year in and year out recruit the top offensive linemen. So you're usually going to come in surrounded by an offensive line group that's going to be able to open up some holes for you. So it's going to come down to, can you connect with this generation of athletes, and can you land consistently these 4- and 5-star athletes? Are you going to be able to go into SEC country and maybe steal a couple of players away? I think that's going to be the number one priority, is outside of player development, is looking at who is maybe the best recruiter.
And it seems like that's what everyone is kind of focused on right now.
Absolutely. And that's the name of the game at this point, is you have to go out and get that talent. You know, that's the big thing. And when you watch teams that have perennially been at the top as far as recruiting rankings, that's what they're getting. They're getting the 4- and 5-star guys. And there's something to be said about developing your 3-star players, but it's a whole heck of a lot easier if you're a head coach and you can play with 5-star guys.
Well, and one of the interesting things about recruiting, and when you look at this class, there are no Florida players in the class. Very rare that that's ever happened. But Brian Kelly told Eric Hansen on the day of the start of the early signing period, when all the guys signed, that was intentional. That they're shifting their focus away from Florida, because when you think about it, there have been some different problems with guys from Florida, and per capita, Georgia
is the hotbed,
is the
right
state
now,
that
baby.
Produces all the talent. So there's more focus on the state of Georgia right now. So it'll be interesting as we track this now over the next few years, kind of how that continues, and who the big guys are who come out of that state.
The thing is, when you go into Georgia now at this point, certainly the University of Georgia has been very competitive within the college football landscape over the last 5 years. But you're also messing with Alabama and that state too, and some other top programs. You know, you look at Florida, and I think why Notre Dame was able to make a footprint there is programs like Florida and Florida State had, you know, probably taken kind of a step back. So there's going to be some competitive battles there within the state of Georgia, and certainly there's a lot of good football players there too.
So now the other thing, so now they're looking for the running backs coach, and Del Alexander, by the way, I think has done a really good job. When you look at the receiver talent, there all these young guys, whether it's Austin or Lindsay or Keys or all these different guys, he's done a good job with recruiting, it seems like. But again,
you don't hear his name a lot either.
No, you really don't. But I mean, he's out there on the West Coast, it seems like, kind of where his ties are, and bringing a lot of those guys in.
I think the number one priority there is, you know, elite level speed.
Yeah.
If there was something over the past couple of years maybe that's missing, was a true vertical threat. You had some guys that could play within the scheme. You had a possession receiver in Miles Boykin, a slot receiver in Chris Fink. You saw Chase Claypool and some other guys too emerge. But now, can you have a guy that consistently get downfield? You know, a guy like Golden Tate, a guy like Will Fuller, who, you know, that changes the way an offense runs, because you may have to roll some coverage that way, knowing that you're one play away from a 60 or 70-yard touchdown pass.
Yeah, absolutely. He's Evan Sharpley. I'm Sean Stiers. We are live at Five Star Dive Bar in downtown Elkhart in the former State Theater. So Chip Long staying at Notre Dame. He had, for the second year in a row, some overtures to Alabama, and he's an Alabama guy. So what do you think? I mean, long-term, do you think we're still going to see Chip Long here?
I don't know.
With all this, for a second year in a row?
How did he not leave? I'm going to ask you that question. I mean, and this is not to, you know, to slap Notre Dame in the face at all, but Alabama is what every other program is really measuring themselves. I mean, we should say Clemson now, too. But, you know, those two programs are what the measuring stick is.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, number one, I found it interesting that there were some coordinators leaving Alabama. You had Josh Gattis going to Michigan. That was interesting to me. But then Chip Long's name coming up and him saying, you know, I'm okay here at Notre Dame. It was a big get to keep Chip Long, especially with what this offense did once Ian Book was inserted as the starting quarterback and moving forward. But if this is going to be the narrative following each season, I don't know. I'm interested to see what he does. I think that at some point, especially if Saban sticks around, he may test those waters.
Well, and I would also think that at some point, as long as Notre Dame continues where they are after rising into the college football playoff last year, after being in the Citrus Bowl last year, and what they've done the last 2 years with just 3 losses combined over the last 2 years, that even if it's not an offensive coordinator position, he's probably going to become in demand again, because you look at, you know, even what we've seen with the NFL, he could become a big name in the NFL, just with the proliferation of offense, if they continue the trend that they're
the youth, on. The youth movement right now across pro sports, but then also within the college realm, you know, there's a need for coaches that connect with this next generation of athletes and creating offenses that are more explosive and speed and space, I think, is kind of the common trend right now, even in the high school and then, you know, in the college realm too. So I think it's going to be tough to keep him around for another year or two, especially if they have some success.
Two different things also happened this week, and that's, I'm kind of springing this one on you a little bit. Brandon Wimbush makes his decision to go to UCF, and then Jalen Hurts, the Alabama quarterback, is going to Oklahoma. Either one of those strike you maybe as a better fit than the other?
I think they're both pretty good fits. I
Do
mean,
you?
I was surprised a little bit. I thought Brandon would maybe stay closer to home. I was thinking maybe Syracuse or Penn State, I know, were a couple of destinations that were talked about. So I was a little surprised that that's where he ended up. And I actually saw the news. Parker Boudreau, who was at Notre Dame, he's the one who, he tweeted it out, and I saw that, and Brandon announced that, obviously, too. So he's going to have an opportunity to go in there and compete for a starting position, and usually in the situations that work out well for grad transfers, they're the guy pretty early on. I think for him it was a great idea to say, let's get this thing, let's shut it down, let's make a decision, let's get on campus, let's be part of spring football, we'll be there in the summer, be there in the fall to give myself the best opportunity to play. So for Jalen Hurts, though, I mean, we could be looking at another Heisman Trophy winner, because that seems to be the trend right now at Oklahoma.
Yeah.
Back-to-back years with the quarterback position. So I think that's a great – I really think for both guys, I think it's a good decision and a good fit. Maybe more so for a guy like Jalen Hurts, you know, going into a program that has credibility right now. They've been in the college football playoff a couple of times over the last 5 years since it started. But I think for both of them, I think it's going to be a fresh start. I've said this for a long time, and I'm a big Brandon Wimbush fan. I wanted him to do so well because he's such a good kid and works so hard.
Yeah.
High character. He handled the whole situation this year great, where it wasn't a distraction at all. I want him to do well. And a fresh start, it might happen. I saw what he could do in high school, and Grand High School is not college football. He's going to have to be more consistent as a passer. He's going to have to get to that 60% range and be able to add that short to mid-range game. But I think he can excel given the opportunity.
Yeah, the short, as you said, the short to mid-range is the biggest area where he has to improve. But he does have the big arm, good with the deep ball, and, I mean, UCF – If they have one thing, they've got speed. I mean, he's going to have some targets to throw the ball to downfield. So that interests me as far as what could happen. You throw in his running ability.
But if they go undefeated,
see much of this
they're
year.
Still not going to make it into the Final Four.
No, they're still not. To me, though, the Jalen Hurts is a surprise, because I do think that he is a better passer than I think most people give him credit for. It's when he has to pass that where he got into some troubles, kind of like with Brandon Wimbush as well. But that just seems like, after watching Baker Mayfield and Kyler Murray the last couple years, it seems like, a different kind of fit for him. So I don't know about that one.
And we might not know that, though, because based on what Alabama does in their program and how they run their offense,
a little more conservative,
we might have not seen the best of Jalen Hurts. And maybe the Oklahoma offense will kind of bring that out of him. And he could have a season like Kyler Murray or a Baker Mayfield.
All right. So speaking of Kyler Murray, the Heisman Trophy winner, He's
going pro.
Yeah, well, he's announced his intention to go to the NFL.
Leverage.
Anyway, and again, and that's because he's kind of throwing it out there where if the Oakland A's give him some big money, and the A's drafted him last year, if he got enough money, like around $15 million is what they're talking about. But let's just start with NFL versus Major League Baseball. Which do you think needs Kyler Murray more right now?
That's an interesting question, Sean. I don't think either need him.
Really?
No. I think both.
You don't think Major League Baseball could use a star like Keller?
But we don't know he's going to be a star.
Well, that's true,
too. That's the thing is, you know, Russell Wilson's going to be in the Yankee spring training this year. I mean, he could have played this, you know, in a similar vein as well. You know, I think there's enough star power in both where, sure, you know, baseball would love to pull him away from football with the way the game is right now and some negative trends on the viewership as far as age with Major League Baseball. You know, how can you get younger? You've got four-plus hour games. You know, how can you make it more interesting? I don't know if he solves that problem, but I'm sure Major League Baseball will love to stick it in the face of the NFL and say, hey, we got your guy. But then what's going to happen is the Oakland A's are going to have to – they're not going to be able to sit on him in the minor leagues for multiple years. And I think that that's part of, you know, Kyler Murray's thought right now is, okay, I'm going to sign this contract, or I've already signed this contract. I'm going to go and play minor league baseball. What's the average – years in the minor leagues? Well, with the Oakland A's, you're probably looking at 2 or 3 years. You know, with some other programs, it could take 6 or 7 years before you even crack a big league lineup. So I know there's been some discussion on would they put him on the 40-man roster as a means to secure him.
And that's the only way they could give him that big money.
I think so.
They have to put him on the 40-man.
And really, it's still not that big of money compared to, you know, what he potentially could make, because once you sign a minor league contract, you're tied into 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're playing any type of minor league baseball, it's tiered. You know, you start at A ball and it's $800 a month.
Right.
You get to high A and double A, it's, you know, $1,100, $1,200.
He can live a little better if he gets that big bonus than just $800 a month.
Right. That bonus is going to be in the bank account, but it's still long bus rides. You know, I saw one good point is he's played, you know, at Oklahoma. He's been, it's both football and baseball, he's been, and their programs, they take care of you at that level.
Right.
You really think he's going to want to go and play in a short A season and then an A ball season and sit on a bus for a 10-hour drive?
Yeah.
I'm thinking no. Wouldn't the NFL lifestyle be a little more appealing than, we're going to bus from here to here?
As long as you make it long term.
True.
Do you think, because, you know, once he gets to the combine, he'll get the official measurements and all of that stuff. I think we're all thinking that at best he's 5'10", but it doesn't even sound like.
Wikipedia says 5'11", but we don't know if that's true.
I don't trust that. So do you think a guy that size can make it in the NFL?
Yes, but it's got to be within the right scheme and the right program.
Everything has to be perfect, essentially.
I mean, you look at guys that are, quote-unquote, undersized. I mean, Drew Brees is the poster child, but he's not every guy. I mean, most NFL programs and GMs are looking for guys that are going to be 6'3 to 6'5.
He's still the exception, Drew Brees, not the rule.
I mean, you look at and even Russell Wilson, too. And, you know, with him, they do a great job of, I'm not going to say protect him, but they build a game plan around their entire team where they can rely on their defense, they can run the football, and then they can pass in certain downs. And what Russell Wilson has done such a great job of, he's been able to complete a high percentage of passes in those situations. So I think that it's going to come down to that. But for a guy that's undersized, this is a really good time in the NFL because more teams are drafting to then build offenses around those guys versus trying to say, here's the offense we've been running for the last 8 years.
Now fit
into that.
Yeah.
What they're saying now is they're bringing in guys like Patrick Mahomes. They're bringing in guys, you know, even like a Nick Foles or a Carson Wentz and saying, or Jared Goff for that matter too, and let's build an offense around your skill set. What were things that you did and had success in college, and how can we accentuate some of those around the personnel we already have?
But do you think that a guy his size, not just the throwing the ball and the whole thing, can he withstand the pounding that he's going to get in the NFL? Because he'll make some runs, don't get me wrong, but he's also going to take a lot of hits trying to make those runs. And other guys have found out the hard way that if you're that running guy, and bigger guys have found out the hard way. Robert Griffin III, Vince Young, all those guys who are much bigger, at least height-wise, and Griffin not quite as thick, I guess, necessarily as Young. But they found out that in the NFL, I mean, to be that mobile guy, you're going to pay the price because of the hit you're going
to
take.
Sean, it comes down to this. You're still going to have to pass out of the pocket.
Right.
You know, we can talk about, you know, taking hits, and I think that, again, getting into a certain situation where you can pick and choose on, you know, when are we going to use your legs to withstand some of that contact? But it's gonna end up coming down to the quarterback position is can you pass it down the field?
Yeah.
And I think that that's still, in a lot of people's minds, that's still possibly a question mark when it comes to Kyler Murray. You know, is he going to be able to do it at the next level? Can they build something around him?
So I'm sitting here and I open up and I'm looking at these different teams. So let's say you're Jacksonville. They need a quarterback badly. I can't imagine that they're going to stick with Blake Bortles for another year after what happened this year. Would you rather have Nick Foles or Kyler Murray?
You could say probably put Joe Flacco into this too.
Yeah.
I mean, he's another name too. I mean, you look at with Nick Foles and Joe Flacco, both have won in the playoffs, have won Super Bowls. I'm probably going to go with those guys first, to be honest with you. They have a proven track record. Would you draft, you know, a guy like Kyler Murray and then sign someone who's been proven? I think that might be, you know, given the question marks on baseball for Kyler Murray, I don't think too many teams are going to want to put all their eggs in one basket unless for Kyler Murray the money's right. Hey, you're going to be, you know, are there guarantees on you're a starting quarterback this year? Here's how much you're getting paid. I think that if that discussion isn't had prior to, there are going to be a lot of teams that are unsure on making that investment, not knowing is baseball still going to be a possibility?
Absolutely. Now, I mean, just the Eagles, I think most people think it's a pretty easy choice that you keep Carson Wentz, even though he's had season-ending injuries the last 2 years, and Foles won a Super Bowl.
They have a lot of money
without
invested,
him,
too.
Yeah, but I mean, would you get more in a trade for Carson Wentz than Foles? I mean, would you think about giving up Carson Wentz and keeping Foles if you could get the right return on him?
Yes.
I would.
And with Foles, you know.
Because Foles isn't that old.
Correct.
Still. He's not even 30 yet.
And what, his contract was a couple million last year? Mm-hmm. I mean, I think there'd be some leverage there. And given, you know, Wentz being hurt the last two seasons, you know, I don't know what his value would be in that. But, you know, with his current contract that the Eagles have, you would think they'd be able to shop and get something for it.
Yeah. You would think so. I mean, back to what we were talking about, who needs Murray more, baseball or football? Something interesting I saw tweeted out earlier this week by the Wall Street Journal baseball writer. He actually covers baseball for the Wall Street Journal. He said, Tim Tebow is the most famous professional baseball player by a wide margin, and it's not even a debate. What do you think about that?
Can we get him on the show and debate that?
I mean, come on. Here's what's interesting.
I know we got a couple of Mets fans here, and I think they would argue right now that Tim Tebow is most definitely not the most popular baseball player.
Well, can you name another New York Met right now?
Yeah, Robinson Cano. Come on.
When did he go to the Mets?
That was this offseason. That was an offseason move.
See, I missed that.
Come on.
He can't be that popular.
Oh,
nobody even knows
whiz.
About it. ESPN.com.
Mike Piazza.
the retired Met. Gary Carter. ESPN.com did a ranking of the 100 most famous athletes in the world back in the summer. There was not one baseball player.
On the top 100?
In the top 100. Because this is sort of like your... It's not just how good you are as a player. This is actually
your
name brand,
yeah.
The whole thing. Guys like Tom Brady and other NFL guys were in there, and Brady was fairly high, as you might imagine. But there were no baseball players in there.
If they'd allow steroids, then they'd be in the top 100. I mean, if we pull it back when we were hitting 60, 70 home runs a year.
When Alex Rodriguez
was
playing.
I'm sure A-Rod, I'm sure McGuire and Sosa and Bonds were all on that top 100 list if we would have looked back then.
Yep. I can't.
What was that commercial? Chicks dig the long ball.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
That's right.
He's Evan
Sharpley. That'll put him in the stands.
He's Evan Sharpley. I'm Sean Steyer, coming to you live from downtown Elkhart, 526 South Main Street, five-star Dive Bar, getting lively for lunch here this afternoon. And some of our other sponsors, Curt Outdoor Living. Make plans now to transform your backyard into an oasis with the experts at Curt Outdoor Living. Food Bank of Northern Indiana. Together we can solve hunger. Learn more at feedindiana.org. By Beef O'Brady's of Granger, where game time meets family time, the corner of State Road 23. The Trattoria at McCree's, a unique pasta bar offering made-from-scratch pastas from old-world Italian recipes. And by Edward Jones, Making Sense of Investing. Contact Joel Lading in Mishawaka or John Shaver in South Bend. We will take a timeout. When we come back, Ian Book was listed among Heisman Trophy favorites this week. We'll talk a little bit about that.
What were my odds?
I think they must have missed that one.
Yeah, I think so.
We'll talk about that and more when we return. Leprechaun Lunch, Sean and Sherpley on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. Sean and Sherpley, Leprechaun Lunch, 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader, coming to you live. Five-star dive bar, downtown Elkhart, 526 South Main Street. And, Evan, tell everybody again about that lunch special today.
Oh, the half turkey club sandwich and a cup of soup for $6.
There you go.
That one right there.
There you go. I already worked my way through that club and my shrimp cocktail.
You finished your shrimp cocktail, too. I'm really proud of you.
Thank you. Very tasty stuff. So, going on right now on Budweiser's weekday sports beat, every weekday, of course, 5 to 7 on 96.1 WSBT, we're celebrating the 25th anniversary of Budweiser's weekday sports beat. That's right. And so every night in the 6 o'clock hour, we have a different memory. We're doing the top 25 memories of the last 25 years. And so earlier this week, I don't know if you got to hear any of it, we had one of your former coaches, Paul Maneri, on. And Steve Stanley was not one of your teammates.
No.
He was one of your predecessors.
He was on the recruiting video, though.
He was, huh?
Yeah, when Notre Dame went to the college.
World Series.
Yeah, the World Series.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So we had both of them on earlier this week. And so I wanted to play something to you that Steve Stanley talked about, because you work with athletes and coaches, and we're always hearing, this and that about coaching philosophies.
And Paul was the reason I went to Notre Dame.
Absolutely. And so I'll give you a chance to kind of get off on that here in just a second. So here is what Stanley had to say about kind of Paul Maneri and the way he went about coaching guys when he was at Notre Dame. So take a listen.
All people really need is someone to believe in them.
Yeah.
And Coach Maneri has the ability, and people have this, special people in life like Coach Maneri have this ability, but not very many. And to be able to raise someone's level of play, I was the greatest player I could be under Coach Maneri's tutelage. And the reason for that was because he believed in me and because I did what he asked me to do. And so I think there's something definitely to be said for the fact that that team, when I talk about people buying in, I mean, you had guys like Paul O'Toole who could hit the ball 400 feet consistently laying down bunts because he believed in Coach Maneri. He believed in the purpose and the plan. You had guys like Kenny Meyer that would come in and just had, he'd have a huge at-bat here or there, but they didn't complain and they didn't gripe. And, you come in a day and age where it's, I want to play every day and I have to have it my way. That wasn't the case with that team, and very seldomly do you have a team like that. In fact, I never played on a team that was that in unison together. But he instilled that in us. He helped us to believe that every day. There was a mantra, and we believed it without a shadow of a doubt.
So some interesting comments there from Steve Stanley, who was kind of the linchpin of the 2002 College World Series team. He tripled in the ninth inning against Rice in the comeback win, and then Brian Stavisky homered a couple batters later for the walk-off victory, and that was kind of part of what we talked with Steve and Paul about the other night. But just your comments, because you just said that Paul was a big reason that you came to Notre Dame.
He was the reason. I was not getting recruited by Notre Dame football until Paul saw me at a baseball camp. and said, well, we probably should talk to the football program too. And really then when Ty Willingham and their staff was fired, Paul was the reason. He was the first one that gave me a call and said, listen, all the same reasons why you want to come here to Notre Dame are the same. You know, they're going to go out and they're going to grab someone who is going to be up to par as far as what this program wants. And certainly that hire at the time with Charlie Weiss, you know, there was a lot of credibility there and winning Super Bowls and developing quarterbacks. So, you know, Paul was very instrumental in getting me to Notre Dame. And, you know, I was very fortunate to have him for the year I had him and would have loved to have played for him for multiple years, just what he did with that program. But to echo some of the things that Steve Stanley talked about is that was, I mean, he's a perfectionist. Paul is a perfectionist. And, you know,
I think that slips by some people because they see just the outgoing personality and things like that. But he's very, very detail-oriented.
I will tell you what. I mean, there was a level of expectation in practice. I mean, we're not talking about the games. Really, this was developed in practice. There was a level of expectation in batting practice. There was a level of expectation when we were taking ground balls in infield. I mean, I remember he kicked our starting first baseman, Craig Cooper, kicked him out of practice.
Really?
And I'm over here like, dang, I'm playing first base right now. Now I'm up with the first group.
And Craig, by the way, Big East player of the year as well.
Yeah. I think he batted over 400.
He
in the
did.
Big East
2 years in a row,
you know, was a longtime player in the San Diego Padres. I think he made it up to AAA. I mean,
right.
one of the best hitters I was around at the collegiate level, and Paul kicked him out of practice. I mean, and it wasn't just once. I mean, it was a couple of times, but there was this level of play that he was trying. He was trying, like Steve said, to get the best out of you. And he knew the buttons to push. But I think at the end of the day, you know, why his teams were so successful, you respected him. You know, you might have not liked him on some days because he would tear you down, but he'd build you up too. I mean, that was the thing, is he had a really good balance between letting you know where you had some issues, but then also saying you're really good at these things too.
Right.
But then in game, I mean, I think we as a group trusted him blindly on certain situations, and we played a lot of small ball. You know, he recruited that where we had a couple of power guys, but we had a lot of scrappers.
Yeah.
You know. Very good fielders, but what he did recruiting the pitching position and then developing that was a game changer. I mean, we had guys, really good starters, but we had some guys that would come out of the pen, and then we had some really good closers too that got better through their career. So we knew if we got to three or four runs, we were probably going to be pretty good. And especially in the later innings, because we trusted, you know, what he was doing. But as far as being able to build a program, he knows what he's doing, and for him to then have the opportunity. And I remember this conversation that I had with him when he got the job offer at LSU. You know, he was apologizing to me, and I'm like, Paul, how can you say no to this?
Right.
You know, this is, I go, I would love to have you here for the, you know, the rest of my career. But that's a hard opportunity to turn down. So, you know, it's been awesome to see the success he's had at LSU, being part of USA Baseball. I wish Notre Dame would have maybe ended up and, you know,
I think it might have taken a lot.
Said, here you go.
This guy's a millionaire now.
We're going to try to keep you here because, you know, since he's left, there's been no conference championships. There's been no 40-win seasons prior to that. And granted, you're switching conferences from the Big East to the ACC. But, we were winning the Big East every year. We were winning the Big East, you know, postseason playoff every single year. We were a staple, you know, within postseason play. And since then, it hasn't occurred. So I know what he did for the program was pretty special.
One of the things that stood out about what Paul said, and you sort of touched on it as well, you said that he could tear you down and build you up. And the big thing that kind of stood out with Steve is it seemed like he made guys essentially think that they were better than they were at some time and sort of willed them into into performance sometimes. And so I'm just curious, because as someone like you who's had a lot of different coaches in different sports, whether it's Charlie Weiss, Dave Schrag, the guy who came after Paul Mainieri, and just sort of how that compares to some of the other personalities that you've worked with over the years.
He was special in that regard. He would be quick to take you and put your arm around and ask you how you're doing, so you could tell that he genuinely cared. And I think that made it easier in the times where he demanded a little bit more of you. And it's probably not fair to compare to the other coaches that I played with or played for. But Paul was just, he was different in that regard.
Let me ask you this then. Because I did kind of put you on the spot with that. But at the same time, when you go from a guy who had his level of both meticulousness mm-hmm. and everything you're talking about with the way he communicated with guys, I would think that it was pretty much night and day different with the next coach that you got after him.
It was a struggle. Yeah. It was. And really, too, on the football side of things, granted I didn't play for Coach Willingham and Bill Dietrich, who was the quarterback coach prior, but I had developed a relationship with them. So there was a little bit of, there were some growing pains, and some of those didn't really go away. you have the staff that recruited you and developed a relationship with you for, multiple years, and then they're gone. So that was a tough transition for me specifically, and I know for a lot of other guys too. Some had, some good outcomes. I would say mine probably wasn't what I had envisioned, post Willingham and post Maneri. But I think looking back now, it probably makes it all the more special, being able, even in that small time period, to play for a guy like Paul and what he brought to the university.
Right. All right. So if you didn't get a chance to hear that co-interview, because we had Paul Maneri on first, and then kind of a few minutes into that, Steve Stanley came on, and we had both of them on at the same time. Paul was pretty surprised by that, but you can go to WSBTRadio.com.
Did he start crying? Or probably did.
He didn't start crying.
He's an emotional guy, though.
he is an emotional guy, but I mean, that's another part of him.
He's real.
As well, yeah.
Oh, man, he's
that's
real.
Right.
Yeah.
And I mean, one of the things that always stands out, because like I would go to the Eck and we would sit there and record his pregame interview in his office there in the clubhouse, and you've got little Tommy Maneri running around in and out, and then over in the corner Doc Maneri, his dad, is sitting there, and I mean that's who Paul gleaned a lot of that mm-hmm. from, because his dad was a psychology major and a Hall of Fame junior college coach himself. But family was just so much a big part of that whole thing with him as well. And you guys were all just more or less a big family.
Yeah,
I think that's why everyone has that
we played for each other, played for him. Yeah. I mean, and you look at his coaching tree now too, is pretty impressive. Guys getting head coaching jobs. One of my favorite assistant coaches was Cliff Godwin. He's the head coach now mm-hmm. at East Carolina, doing a great job. But within the realm of both players, he coached that then coached for him, and then other places, but also assistants that he had on staff at Notre Dame, that he's had at LSU. They've had great careers outside of there too. So he does a good job of developing you as a coach, as a person, and then kind of letting you go, and you're seeing success in other areas.
Right. Let's talk a little baseball, since we're kind of on the baseball subject right now. Bryce Harper, Manny Machado, the two big free agents mm-hmm. on the market. They're still out there, and this is looking more and more just like last year, where it took forever for all these dominoes to start falling before guys were signing anywhere. And, I mean, pitchers and catchers are going to report in just a couple of weeks. So do you think there's collusion by owners in all this, or is it just more data out there that are driving these decisions by teams, as far as, because these guys want these long-term contracts, but I think the data by now shows that production is going to diminish by the time they get past their mid-30s.
Listen, Sean, 7 to 8 years is a long time.
Yeah.
I mean, these guys right now, 26, 27 years old, you're saying that they're in their prime or about to enter their prime, but by the time that contract gets towards the end, they could have diminishing returns as far as their production. So I think it's smart from teams to take a deep look at this because it's a lot of money and it's a huge investment. So I like where you're – I don't think the collusion side – I think it is you're seeing more data-driven teams look at, okay, well, where are the peak years? You know, where is the break-even point as far as our investment? What's our return on that in years and on also money? So
right.
I think there's programs, GMs, and managers are, I think they're more educated now. It's not a guessing game. They are making sure that this, you know, it adds stability for the player. It adds financial security for the player. They're always, and their agents are always going to be out for more money and more years. Mm-hmm. The teams, they're trying to settle into, well, it's 5 to 6 maybe a little better.
Right.
Maybe we'll pay you a little bit more for the 5 to 6, but that's, I think, the issue with the players is they're wanting something that's going to be here. I'm tied into this area. I'm tied into this community for 7 to 8+ years.
What I've never understood is the way they structure these contracts is, like, they tend to backload them more than frontload them. It would seem like if you're going to give a long term, then you frontload it more, so you're paying for the more immediate production, and then there is some skill diminishing over the course of that contract. It makes it easier potentially to move that guy or even cut him if you wanted to.
Well, not every player can be as smart as Bobby Bonilla, right? We've got
right.
the Bobby Bonilla day every single year, and I know
that's
Jeffrey,
right.
who's playing Golden Tee right now, knows all about that. The Mets, they pay Bobby Bonilla July 1st through 2035,
$1 million.
$1.1 million every single year. That guy, he's got it figured out.
That's right.
So he basically, you know, what he did for the Mets was, you're going to pay me much less while mm-hmm. I'm playing and pay me more later. So,
it's
interesting to see how these teams structure the contracts on, you know, would you front load them? And then if you're starting to see, you know, play that is deteriorating, could you then ship them where the contract is worth a little bit less?
Now, something else baseball related. Well, this is basketball related, but I'm gonna spin it to baseball. The NBA recently announced a partnership with Turner Sports and Twitter, where they're going to broadcast the second halves of regular season and playoff games on Twitter, following a single player in an isolated camera view. So during the first half of a game, you're watching it on TV. Mm-hmm. You can vote which player that you want to follow around in the second half. And so then they're still going to show the game on TV, obviously. But then in the second half, you can get on Twitter, and there's going to be an isolated cam on that. So, one, what do you think of the idea?
I love it.
And two, doesn't it make sense for a sport like baseball that's really struggling still to connect with fans, I think?
Yeah, I mean, I think the hard part with that is, you know, there's so much downtime in baseball, you know, between
pitches. Almost hit a mic on them or something.
That I think that would be more appealing on, you know, the what are they saying? What are they communicating? That would
right.
probably be more fun. You know, with basketball, you know, because there's so much action, I think miking them up, though, in basketball would probably be pretty cool, too. I mean,
yeah.
that type of exclusive interaction. Who would you vote for? I mean, who would you want to follow?
If it was baseball, you mean?
No,
basketball. Just basketball.
I know you like the Warriors, so I mean, who on that team would it be? Draymond?
I was going to say, I think Draymond would be pretty entertaining, wouldn't it?
What's the over?
As entertaining as
I know
anybody.
This is a little bit off topic with this, but once Boogie comes back, what's the over under on how many points they score per game? Are we saying like 150?
Ooh, man, the way it's going right now,
it's almost unfair.
Who would you follow? Who would you want to follow?
Oh man,
Tom Noyce said Pat Connaughton.
Well, yeah,
he said he might be sitting a little bit too much
That's
still right
sneaky
now.
Sneaky athleticism, baby.
That's right.
At 40-inch vertical.
That's right.
I don't know. Probably someone who is, I would say, someone like Draymond Green, someone who talks a lot.
Right.
I think it'd just be fun to see their interaction with other players. Miking them up, that would be a no-brainer. I would love to hear what's going on between.
You'd have to have the 7 seconds. Although
yeah.
it'd be on Twitter, so you could just kind of get away with anything.
Oh, what's that? You can always hit on Twitter where it says view, it says graphic material. If there's
uh-huh.
if there's something with some language or something, I'm sure they could make that happen for us.
Perfect. All right. It is 12:46. We're going to take a timeout. When we come back, I was talking about that Ian book and the Heisman and all that stuff, so we'll get to some more Notre Dame football talk. But also the Bears and Cody Parkey, mm-hmm. the kicker. I haven't had a chance to ask you about that yet, so we'll do all that and more when we return. 5-Star Dive Bar, downtown Elkhart, Leprechaun Lunch, Sean and Sharpley, 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. once again, Five Star Dive Bar with Sean and Sharpley on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. Bob Henning manning things here for us on location. Garrett Kaser back in the studio. Good job by him. We've got about 7 or so minutes. I just saw a tweet from you that I could not agree more with. When did these high school barstool accounts start, by the way?
It is the worst thing ever.
High school barstool.
I don't get it.
We've just gone to another realm,
bad.
I think.
Just bad.
Oh, end it.
Stop it.
Come on. And they're all arguing about who has the most followers and likes.
But there's so much trash talking, too, and then it's even more anonymous.
I know.
Cut it out.
All right, so Ian Book opened this week 16-1 odds to win next year's Heisman Trophy. It's been 31 years since Tim Brown, who we had on the show a couple of weeks ago, won Notre Dame's last Heisman. So over under 4.5 years before.
You're going to answer this question too?
I will answer it.
Over. By a wide margin.
I agree. Okay, next. I just think it's too hard because, I mean, things that we talked about early in the show with the offensive proliferation and everything else, well, like when you look at Baker Mayfield and Kyler Murray the last 2 years, 40-plus touchdowns to win the Heisman. So you've not only got to be in a good team, but you've also got to put up monster numbers like
monster
that.
Monster numbers.
I mean, you can't just
got to get to 40 TDs.
Yeah. I mean, that's what it is now. Mm-hmm. It's pretty much the bar.
It's two special things. An undefeated season and 40 touchdown passes.
Yeah, because, you know, I don't know if a guy like Tim Brown, Rocket Ismail, those kind of guys who can be a full-time receiver, back, whatever, and kick returner. I mean, it's been a while since we've seen an all-around guy like that in college football, really since Woodson.
It's dominated by the quarterback position,
yeah,
no doubt. And really, I mean, you could look at the running back position, too, if you have a big year.
As long as you play for Alabama.
Correct. Yeah, there's been a lot of those recently. But, yeah, the quarterback position, you go undefeated and you toss up some big number, 40 to, you know, 45-yard touchdown range, I think you're gonna be pretty good.
Trevor Lawrence is the Vegas favorite, 3-1. Tua Tagovailoa, 4-1. Jalen Hurts, before he was even on a team, had 9-1 odds. Hmm. I haven't seen if they've
probably
shifted
update
since,
those.
He's in Oklahoma.
Those are three good picks.
I would think that it has to go up now. Okay. Cody Parkey did the thing with the Today Show last week, the Bears kicker. And Matt Nagy, the Bears head coach, said that it was more of a me thing and not a we thing. So if you're the Bears, is Cody Parkey on your team next year?
Well, I think based on those comments, it sounds like no. I mean, if you're not part of the we and you're just a me, then I was surprised by that. Well, I would go and hide under a rock.
I know. I know.
I wouldn't be doing TV spots.
And, I mean, you're the kicker. There's already enough derogatory stuff thrown at you.
Well, maybe that's why.
Isolated.
He wasn't really
else.
Thinking, you know.
Yeah. They're going to have to.
They've got some money invested in this guy.
Yeah,
though.
And that's the thing, because they signed him to I think he's got 3 more years on his contract, $9 million in guaranteed money. So if they're gonna get rid of him, they're gonna have to eat some money to do it.
Listen,
Robbie Gould is out there though; he's a free agent.
And I'll go kick for, you know, half of that. I'll kick for a quarter of that if the Bears really want me to.
That's right.
I can hit the goalpost throwing it. I'm pretty good at that.
There you go.
And Parkey was pretty good at hitting it while he was kicking.
And what's his name? The drop kick guy for Seattle. I mean, I'm
spicing it up a
little bit. I'm surprised that Pete Carroll didn't have him try to drop kick a field goal.
No.
But, I mean, he was drop kicking kickoffs a few weeks ago when Janikowski got hurt. Okay. Sports Illustrated says Varsity Blues, the best football movie of all time. Buy or sell?
I sell. As much as I like Varsity Blues, and it is one of my top football movies.
Is it?
I watched it as a sophomore in high school before every game with a group of senior football players.
Uh-huh.
My all-time favorite is The Program. All right. Omar Epps, Halle Berry, James Caan. All right.
I don't even know if I've seen it.
Come on. You haven't seen Latimer, the linebacker, where he said, place at the table. You have not seen this?
I don't think so.
And
what year is this?
I don't know. I mean, it's a fairly older movie, but there's so many good lines in it. This is the one where the running back, Omar Epps, has to carry the football in class, and his teammates are assigned to knock it out.
Okay,
I have seen that.
It's been a while. I would say I've seen it once.
You need to rewatch it. And then the backup quarterback is loosely based on my life. Bobby Collins, the backup quarterback. Yeah,
so he can shoot threes. And
yeah, he's got that all going down,
play football,
too.
Hit home runs, the whole thing.
That's my all-time favorite.
I've got Friday Night Lights.
That's
at
good
the top
movie
of mine.
Too.
Where is that in your top five anywhere? The Billy Bob Thornton Friday Night Lights.
I watched the TV show,
and I did too.
I liked the TV show quite a bit. At least
the first few
seasons of that. The Friday Night Lights football movie was pretty good. I don't know. I would probably say Remember the Titans is going to be higher than Friday Night Lights for me. But right now, ultimately, the program is my top. And that was in 1992, by the way.
I think you've met Rudy. Where do you put Rudy on your football?
It's not on my list.
Not on the list.
No.
I still think, especially if you're not connected to Notre Dame, I think that the storyline, it's amazing how many people not from Notre Dame go straight to Rudy.
Yeah, they do.
When they mention Notre Dame.
Well, when I signed at Notre Dame, that was my dad's quote to the TV station was, "I feel like Rudy's dad right now." We haven't let him live that one down.
Thanks, Dad. Man. Real quick, Dallas, Philadelphia, San Diego, the Colts all lost last weekend. So which makes it the farthest next year? Which regresses the most?
Colts. Let's say if Colts go the furthest, especially if Andrew Luck continues on his tear. And I'm going to say Philly's going to take a step back.
I think they stand to as well, especially because they're not going to have Nick Foles, it doesn't seem like, as the backup anymore.
I wasn't sure what to do with Dallas, and I wasn't sure what to do with the Chargers. I think that they're going to probably make some moves in the offseason, but I really do think the Colts are in a good spot right now. I was a little surprised to see they fired their offensive line coach.
And Quentin Nelson was tweeting about him. What a great job he did.
I thought that was a little strange. He had done a great job with that offensive line. But I think where they're set up right now, if Andrew Luck plays the way he has, they're going to be pretty good.
I got the Colts going the farthest, Dallas stepping back, because if you look back.
I'm sorry to hear that.
They've only made back-to-back playoffs, 2006, 2007. Oh, it's a roller coaster every year. All right, want to thank our sponsors, Food Bank of Northern Indiana, Edward Jones, Trattoria at McCree's, Kurt Outdoor Living, and Beef O'Brady's of Granger as well. And, of course, Five Star Dive Bar. We'll be back in 2 weeks. We will be back at Four Winds South Bend next week, giving away those green hats. So I'll see you out there.
Sounds good. See ya.
Sean and Sharpley, WSBT South Bend.